Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. I swear I'm going to have a 27th anniversary logo for the launch of our... We have a whole year to celebrate our 27th anniversary, but this segment will do that, as will kind of everything this week, this month, as I get around town and eat my 27 favorite things to share. There are going to be a lot of surprises. A lot of them are very small, meager, and then right on up to like the delicious fried lobster tail that I'm going to enjoy on Thursday over at the Beaumont in Catonsville. If this guy were in town, I would invite him out. I would give him Maryland lottery tickets. I would give him even the pressure luck, give him the whammy. I would definitely give him the whammy because he's from Philadelphia. But the Orioles in the my Phillies tangling, his Phillies tangling. Micah Buchdahl has been in my life. Dude, is this the 40th anniversary of our relationship? Did we meet?
Yeah.
We met in 84. We didn't meet in 85. We met in 84, I think, right?
Yeah. It might have been 85, but yeah, so 27 is like a drop in the bucket for our relationship and how long we've known each other.
Just a few days, just a few
Yeah.
minutes. But Michael was the assistant to the assistant PR director for the Washington Capitals back in the day when I was Ed Frankovic and I and Phil Jackman. I was getting in his Nissan Sentra and going down 295 and watching his wackiness drive, including me crazy. And Michael has been involved in my life forever. Michael is a practicing attorney in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And you've converted, and I bring you on like that. This is my Philadelphia Eagles 1970 medallion. I bring you on because you've embodied this thing where you have the Baltimore thing, you had the Philadelphia thing, you have the legal thing, you have the sports, like you're no dummy, you know how it really works, but like you and your kid and kids live in Disney World because you're Phillies fans and you spend a lot of money on sports, you go to sports, but you understand sort of the dirty, how the sausage is made and where the work stoppages come in. So I love having you on, but like I hate having you on when the Orioles are completely irrelevant, right? And like this is supposed to be Phillies, Orioles, you and me going, and it's nothing like that, man. So I'm sorry for that, Mike.
Yeah, well, when you think about, like, when I went to Camden Yards last year for this series, it was such a huge series among two potential World Series contenders. And this year, it's a little bit different.
Well, that was Fleet Week. I had you on. We did the show down at Slancha in Fells Point. There were Phillies fans everywhere for 4 days, and as I remember, didn't the Orioles kick their ass? I'm pretty sure it was like it was the end, the beginning of the end. It was another week and a half where they went to Yankee Stadium, and then it was like, I mean, it has been a fall that has been so precipitous over 14 months. And Michael, we'll get to the Eagles and our Capitals history and crab cakes and eating, which you do a lot of in Philadelphia. But sort of the here and now is like you're an old sports head. You're a big baseball guy. You and your son, Ben, your daughter, when she's in from St. Louis and all that stuff, you go to Phillies games, you go to Eagles games, you go to Sixers games. I mean, you grew up in hockey. I don't see you with that gritty character they got up there at the Flyers games, but I know you through hockey, but your background was really like being an Oriole and a Colt fan, and your family still lives here in Baltimore. Your nephew was one of my interns. I mean, I've seen your folks out at synagogues and community events and protests and marches and different stuff, but like this Oriole thing here is, I mean, it's sort of catastrophic with the new ownership and what this is supposed to represent and where you and I have been in the last 14 months. Not even 14 months, dude. It's been 13 and a half months.
I was kind of hoping that, especially with the new ownership, that the Orioles would follow sort of a similar model to the Braves when they had, you know, retooled and had all these young guys that were all, you know, and locked them all up, right? Like all these guys, they locked up to favorable contracts early on. And so I thought the Orioles might follow that same kind of formula with some of those young guys. Just
that
to
takes
get
a lot of money though.
Yeah. You know, just to lock them in. But, you know, usually when you lock them in, you know, early, you're paying lesser dollars rather than once you get within, you know, 2 or 3 years of free agency, then you kind of wait it out.
Well, then there's the Boris thing where like his guys don't really do that.
Yeah. And so, you know, and look, I mean, in the end, what's really the key to, Phillies, winning this year or being successful? It's all starting pitching, right? It's all starting pitching. That's what's, keeping them afloat and keeping them, near the top. And that's the one thing that when you look to see who's starting on a daily basis for the Orioles, there's not much there. When you still had Kyle Gibson as part of your rotation, and Charlie Morton obviously totally outperformed his contract, which only got him a one-way ticket out. But it's a matter of making those investments. And I think, I was talking about Rubenstein. I was talking about John Middleton the other day with some folks when we were at the Phillies Hall. It's the Phillies Hall of Fame, Wall of Fame alumni weekend. And I remember thinking as a kid, how horrible it was that we had this local owner in Jerry Hofberger who just couldn't, who didn't have money to spend or wouldn't spend money. And and back then you could still if you had great guys, if you had people like Hank Peters and Earl Weaver managing, you could still win.
If
But
you made trades and got Tippi Martinez and Scott McGregor and Rick Dempsey in one deal, right?
yeah,
Like,
exactly.
you know what I mean? You turn Reggie Jackson into things that you can use. And I mean, it was deftly managed. I mean, as
Yeah.
John Eisenberg has pointed out in his bird tapes, and I had Freddie Lynn on, which was the beginning of the end, but I still love Fred Lynn. But yeah, I mean, the history of that and where baseball is, and just hearing Rubenstein talk about cost certainty. Salary cap, just like kerosene on top of gasoline on top of manure. And like speaking of it, like he just doesn't know, like he doesn't understand what old heads like you and I that you learned about law through law and law school, but you probably learned about it when in 81 when labor shut down and your dad's sitting around trying to explain to you why that baseball players aren't working and we're 13 years old and a lifetime of that. I don't know where the baseball model is, Micah. And I'm here in Baltimore. And the craziest thing, dude, is the bananas came in. The bananas came in this weekend and it's $200 to get in. I was in Philly when the bananas bananaed and nannered as we watched the other day. I mean, my wife and I put it on TV. We're like, what the hell is it? We laughed at it a little bit, but I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's outperforming Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, and that's the part that really has me scratching my head about that and about this. And also up in Philly, where like you got a good thing going on up there, right? It's full most of the time. People are all in. Everybody's got a bubble pee. Everybody's proud of it. I mean, I saw it in the streets of my city last June, just in sort of a Phillies takeover down here of Camden Yards. And Philadelphia baseball has been really good this century and very stable because television's been good, revenue's been good. And look, man, you're fighting with all sorts of things in Philadelphia, including the football team winning Super Bowls now, and you've spent a lot of money on that as a fan, as a consumer, all of that. Like, Philadelphia sports is vibrant, but the Phillies didn't have to be a vibrant part of that. It wasn't always that way, but it's been something that's been managed partially by media expectations, good ownership, all of that kind of coming together. Meanwhile, Micah, this has been a shit show down here for 30 years. And for a year and a half, this guy came in. He says things that don't make any sense to get along with the players. They're in last place now. Attendance is down. He made a bobblehead of himself. I mean, they're not even treating Jim Palmer right. Like, I want to pull my hair out, and I have a lot of hair, Micah.
Well, the bobblehead thing I thought was ridiculous, but I said the same thing again the other night. We were talking about that bobblehead because when the owner of the Phillies is introduced, he is beloved, right? John Middleton is beloved here. He could actually do a bobblehead tomorrow, and I'd want to go get one.
Why? Why? What about him?
Because he's putting his money back into he's putting his money into the team. And so, that's the thing is you look at teams now where, okay, you're almost all of you are billionaires, right? You're billionaires. Hopefully you bought teams not necessarily to make a lot of money, maybe you did, but also because you've got like $1 zillion and you want to like win. you get a kick out of winning. And that's what Middleton does here, right? Like he wants to win. Like he does not care about, the level of profitability, okay? Because they're all making money, right? Like nobody's not profitable. The Oakland A's or the Sacramento A's or the Vegas A's, they're profitable,
Well, they're
regardless.
getting handout across handout, stadium deals,
Yeah,
tax breaks, just amortization, smart money guy, just all of it, just all of it. That's why Rubenstein got into it. And I've heard him talk out of four sides of his mouth in four different audiences in four different places. And it all he called it a philanthropy at one point. I'm like, it's $1.8 billion and beers are $20. It ain't a philanthropy. Stop with that. You know what I mean? Like,
No, but
let.
you should be doing it because you want to, like, you should be doing it because you have lots of money and you want to win. Because that's what you, like, that's what I would do. Like, Nestor, if I got, if I had $20 billion tomorrow, even 20 billion wouldn't necessarily buy me a top tier team anymore. But, I would buy the team, right? And what would my goal be over the next, like, hopefully 20 or 30 plus years that I have to live? I would be trying to win a championship. Like that's what I'd be doing with my money because I'd get a kick out of it, right? Like that's why I would be spending it. That's why I'd be doing it. As opposed to, somebody who's investing and sitting there, counting the dollars, dollars in, dollars out. And, and look, the reality is like look at what the Minnesota Twins are doing now. They've been up for sale, right? Like they've been up for sale. The guy strips the parts, to pick up a few extra, save a few dollars.
It's a well-worn story. It's been going on in this sport for 50 years, right?
But the reality is, like,
Back to Charlie Finley, literally, right?
the reality too is though, like the selling price in the end of the Minnesota Twins will not be that different with good parts or without. Like someone who comes in and says, I want to own a baseball team. Maybe I'm a billionaire from Minnesota. I'd love to win there, or I'd love to buy a team there. Like the price isn't going to be $100 million less or $500 million less because you stripped out all the parts and made it less competitive,
You
right?
know
Like
what's amazing,
cost.
dude? When Angelo sold last year, I did quick math on this, and you can just get your calculator out for how many days they own the team. Peter put $29 million in cash in. That's all he had. It was all the money in the world he had, according to bankers and people when I wrote the Peter Principles. And they bought it allegedly for $173 million. It was all baked up. There was $45 million in cash sitting because it was 1993. It was the All-Star game, all the sweet money, just all of that money, money, money. And Eli Jacobs couldn't take any of it because he was in bankruptcy. So it just sat there. So it was really about $125 million is what the team cost. There was about $29 million in. They figured it out with the bankers and Bank of America, put it all together. Joe Foss did such a good job that Peter put him in charge of it, put the banker in front of the baseball team. So this is 33 years ago. Sell the team for $1.8 billion. And I did just my quick math. This has nothing to do with how many crab cakes they ate, how much fun they had, how many times they flew and rode it off into Fort Lauderdale, how many tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, they took out of the franchise through Masson, through the $75 million that they were gifted from Major League Baseball upon sale, all the stuff that happened with the Nationals, everything that happened. It was $1 million a day in profit for 31 years. That's the difference between $29 million, or I'll give you another 100 days across 32 years, $129 million, or whatever that $123 million, I think the number was. That to $1.8 billion, including all the tax breaks we gave them, all the money they made, all the horses they ran, all the everything, 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 all the profit, hundreds of millions, maybe $1 billion in just in profit that they took out of it, the family. The money was $1 million a day, every day for 30 years. That just speaks for itself as to how wealthy is, Mike.
Yeah, but also again, it's a matter of whether or not, you're trying to maximize profitability for yourself or you're interested in winning,
Well, they
right?
did that every day. They maximize
Right.
profitability, right?
Okay. So versus being, truly interested in winning. Like, so that's the difference. Like, you have owners that will do anything to win a championship because they've got a lot of money, they're going to make a profit, and it's a matter of, like, again, like here, Middleton rather make he'd rather earn $100 million less and win a trophy than if you said to him, like, oh, you'll make $100 million more, but you won't win, or you can take out 100 million and win something, or try to win something. He's going to try to win something again, because you've got that kind of money. I say the same thing about, like Temple basketball. Like, if I had, a couple hundred million, I would fund their, NIL athletes and get in the tournament. I could single-handedly do that. Like, you could do that in sports, but I'd be doing it because I want to see the team in the tournament, because I get a kick out of it, not because of any level of profitability. So, that's kind of that's sort of that's sort of the difference there.
Bisciotti, when I wrote Purple Rain 1 and 2, he said that the only reason he bought the Ravens is because he couldn't buy the Terps. And now you can buy the Terps. So Micah Buchdahl is our guest. He's a longtime sports. What would you say about your sports fandom or your insiderness? What would AI tell me about your law practice versus where you came from, which was at one point you were general manager and in the indoor soccer? I almost forgot about that. I'm forgetting that part of it in the MISL, but you went and ran the New York team, Arrows, correct?
The Express.
Express, my so I'm sorry about that, but out of Long Island, right? Is that was
Yeah.
correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the late 80s, like you were on a trajectory, and I know your son wants to study some sports stuff and maybe get into the business side of where it is now from where it was when you and Lou Corletto were letting me into the press box down there for Capitals games during the Mike Gartner era. But sports has changed a lot. You exited it. I've sort of stayed 3 feet in, most of the way in, but you love it. I mean, you spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of passion, your family. It still engulfs very much, even behind the pictures I see behind you and where your kids decide to go to school, that you still love sports in a way that you've been unaffected by the filtration. Because I've had you on when media members are getting thrown out of the press box in Philly. Years ago, let alone what's happened to me, let alone what ESPN and the NFL pulled off this weekend, and the magic act of Justin Tucker here being a serial sort of kind of predator for years, and the NFL whitewashing it, and it's camp time now, and no one's ever like it's an amazing ecosystem, and maybe how Trump reverberates down into sports, but you escaped sports, but you love sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's, when I get together with buddies, like, my friend Mark Piazza from, you probably remember from the Flyers and MSG, when we get together, for lunch every couple months, he'll always remind me, how much the business is different than what I grew up in, that it's totally different. It's not the same at all. Even like, I tell kids, I tell the kids stories about, when I was hired at the Caps. When I was interviewed at the Caps, as for the assistant PR role, I sat down with David Poyle. Like, David Poyle interviewed me, and he was the one who makes the final decision as to who hires the PR guy. If you were to be hired in the same role at the Caps today, the GM, would not be involved in any way, shape, or form. I'd be dealing with whatever that, corporate entity is that you work for.
Monumental is the name.
Monument. Yeah, like
What you really be dealing with is Ted Leonsis's kid. He's
yeah,
kind of he'd have to like you enough to hire you.
but
Yes.
it, it's just a completely different world. And I used to tell the story about, and I still remember it. I was, I lost one of one, I had lost one of my last sports jobs, and I was talking to Brian Murray outside the Sheridan Society Hill in Philly. And I was talking to Brian about, trying to get my next job,
He's
and
coaching the Florida Panthers at the time, probably.
at that time, yeah, at that time, and he's like, Micah, he goes, for God's sakes, you went to law school, go get a job, make some money, and then buy tickets and go to games. Like, it'll be a much better route for you. And so, so I always remember having that conversation with him. And, when I get together with my buddies, whether it's Piazza or, if I'm talking to Kenny Albert, whomever, and I talk about the, the basically the opportunity that I had to be involved in my kids' lives, every day for their entire childhood, things that you don't get to do when you're working in sports. Okay. Like, so the experience that I had with my kids, watching Ben play baseball and basketball, varsity sports every day, those are things that I would not have had the opportunity to do if I was working in the game. And so,
Well, I sat with you guys in Minneapolis when the Eagles won their first Super Bowl. I came down and took a picture with you guys, and you're there as fans in your Eagles jerseys and your Dawkins, whatever, and like all of that going on. And yeah, I'm just fascinated because it's not inexpensive to be a fan, right? Like in a general sense, time, effort, love, commitment, loyalty. I mean, and you guys are three seasons, three sports, all in. There's college, like you've kept it up over 40 years. I don't know that everybody in Baltimore has, across race lines, across football and baseball, across politics, across finances, certainly not where it comes to the Terps or Towson or local universities and minor league ball and different things like that. It's been really hard for the Orioles to keep up in a lacrosse town. The Ravens are a different entity because it's football and they've won. But there's a lot of empty seats for Ravens, a lot of tickets that are 10 bucks on game day. Like it's not like in Philly. Philly is still really vibrant. And I think that your law firm would be that way, your office, your social groups, your country club, your kids' schools, your community groups, wherever you are, wherever you worship. Everyone's, I know the way it is. We grew up here, right? That's what's in your bloodline, right? So with the Colts and the Orioles in the 70s, we had, that's why I did everything I've, that's why I have 27 years in the run of the sports radio station. That's a little shipwrecked by sports in a little bit because like you're a little hostage to whatever they are, good or bad. And at least in your market, all the money and time has resulted in a lot of you've squeezed fruit, you squeezed the juice out of it, right? Like in Philadelphia, some other place. If you're an Oriole fan, I sit here and I guess we get back to the beginning of that is I'm trying to understand the investment they want us to make and what we're buying. With the Ravens, it's hey, it's Lamar, it's we're gonna win the Super Bowl. With the Orioles, it's I don't know what the investment is or what the promise is, and they haven't stood in front of it in a long, long Brooks Robinson, Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken kind of time. And I do think it's not inexpensive. And that's the part for me where every time I see you out, I'm like, you spend money on going to games. Some people do. The Bananas were here. I spend money. People think I spend a lot of money on concerts. I don't. Kind of looks that way. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I know what sports costs and I know what entertainment costs. And with the Orioles, I know what it's going to take financially to keep Henderson, Holiday. And it's going to take a lot of Micah Buchdahls here. You know what I mean? A lot. It's just going to take that kind of energy. And they didn't even understand that about me when I called them last year to say, look, I want to come back. My name's Aparicio. Just be nice. It's already withering here. You know what I mean? Like, and I have all of my friends that put their money in for the first time in a long time because it didn't say PG Angelos over top of it. And the renewals are coming now. And you get your renewals and you don't sneeze at it, right? Like you and your kid are going to the games and that you just love it that much.
Yeah, I mean it's the price of admission, whatever it is here. I mean, I always complain about, like one of the downside of Philadelphia for the Eagles and Phillies is that, you have to spend a lot of money, right? Like, these games this weekend, this we're playing the Detroit Tigers this weekend. These games have been completely sold out. And Ben and I actually bought like one of those ballpark passes for August to supplement our seats. So we have those standing rooms admission for the entire month to go to games. And so we'll go, we won't go to every, I think they're like 16 home games. I think we'll go to 10 to 12 of the 16, but I always say like, we can't really afford to, to get, we certainly can't afford to have good seats for every game that we go to. And then even just, when I paid the bill recently for the Eagles season tickets, I think those are $3,000 for the pair now, in the upper bowl. And you have that penalty of, two preseason games that are basically worth zero, right? I don't go, I sell them for literally, 5 cents on the dollar. But yeah, it does cost a lot of money. But going back to, it's interesting there too. The Phillies had a very that very long down period after the 08 to 010 teams that were very successful. They had like a decade of losing, and that de most of that decade was my Ben 17. Most of that decade was his youth, his early youth, and so the team that he was going out to watch was terrible. And so it was, but it was cheap because it was terrible. But they, now that they've, it's been interesting the last couple of years to see that they were able to reignite the fan base. And, and so that's what I wonder about in Baltimore is, what does it take to reignite the fan base? And also understanding that the competition for attention that the Orioles have is different than when we were kids. Like the only competition, it was, Colts and, it was Colts and Orioles that, that was kind of the competition. And then, people like me who went to a ton of like Clippers slash Skipjack games. And then when the MISL came in and, people who, again, people that are young people don't realize just how big the MISL was in the 80s in Baltimore. Like it was the equivalent of any NBA or NHL successful sold out team.
And Kenny Cooper just walking through Baltimore would be a
He was a
testament to that.
celebrity. Yeah, so, but the today the competition for that attention and that dollar is so much more that it's not just a couple of teams, it's esports, it's a lot of other
Well,
press.
the women's game and women's basketball for sure. Soccer taking a lot of everything in a place like Philadelphia with the Union and every ladies soccer in a place like Philadelphia or as club programs. I mean, soccer and lacrosse here and even in Philly and other places beyond Long Island and Syracuse back in the day, it's a nationwide sport. It's just and when I hear people talking baseball about their kids and stuff, that kids need to play two sports and three sports and being all of that, like being in all of that and being in the upper deck for games and supporting sports and having money for the Terps or for Coppin or for Towson or for the Frederick Keys or the Aberdeen Ironbirds or what used to be the Bowie Bay Sox, like I'm with you, man. Like I grew up where my dad was a Bleacher bum. We went to a lot of games in 79 and 83 because it didn't cost a lot of money. I mean, the Orioles have that pass where you buy for a month and you go out there and stand anywhere you want and drink the beer. I just don't see anybody doing it, right? So even when they were good the last 2 years, it's not like everybody raced out there. My wife and I were out there the night they clinched 2 years ago. What 101 games? There were 18,000 people out there the night they clinched. It wasn't like, and Micah, I'll be honest with you. And by the way, Micah Buchdahl's our guest. He is a Philadelphian attorney, sports guy, former general manager in the MISL, former assistant. I'm trying to make you sound good. Former assistant PR guy with the Washington Capitals 40 years ago, and now just a Philadelphia lawyer, like right out of an Elton John song or a Daryl Hall song or something like that. All these years later with the Orioles and what? My last name's Aparicio, dude. Like, not as valuable as Ripken, but pretty good. Not bad, kind of a cool last name to have here. And I love baseball. And even like about the bananas over the weekend, like I was a Globetrotter guy. I mean, I loved Meadowlark. I love Curly. Like I remember going. I had Curly Neal in my studio. Mark Fine, wherever you are, hi. But like for me, I like baseball. Competitive baseball. I like the fact that they've moved the second baseman and the shortstop back where they belong. I like the pitch clock. I had Leo Mazzoni on for an hour the other day talking about arms and 5 days rest. Who better to talk about than Leo Mazzoni coming back from the All-Star game in Atlanta talking about pitching? All these guys, their arms are falling off. The Tommy John thing. We talk about Elias. He sucks. He sucks. Dude, all these guys' arms are falling off. Corbin Burns, you like him for 230? 30 million, his arm would have fallen off too. So what they're teaching the kids, the way the game's being played, max effort. When I hear Palmer and McDonald and Dave Johnson pitchers talking about the game and the way the game is played and what's going to need to be done here to resurrect the Orioles in my market, my town, our town, 27 years into seeing this, I mean, they don't know what they're doing, Micah. And that's really the unfortunate part. Like, I waited 30 years for these new people to come in. And I'm telling you, man, I'm 18 months in, the way they've treated me, the way they treat people around town, this. The most unauthentic thing I can imagine, standing on a bar, buying beer, and then disappearing when the team's in last place. It is just not top to bottom, dude. They don't know what they're doing. And I saw Buck Showalter back here bananaing over the weekend, and they got Adam Jones riding in on a horse from Barcelona, and they're going to give him a pie. And they're in last place, man. And like, buying pitching ain't cheap, ain't easy, certainly ain't a guarantee of anything. And it feels to me like they don't have the belly for this. You know, you're the owner, it's going to come and make a bobblehead of yourself and disappear when you're in last place. I mean, you and I are got 100 years of life on this planet. You in some circles and sports in Philadelphia, two different sides of town, two different faiths, backgrounds, everything. Tells me a lot when people disappear when they're in last place. I don't care who they are. That's the message of sports for me. I learn nothing about anybody when they win. Everybody wants to grease the poles and show up in the Shriners outfits when they win. When they lose, who's in front of their locker? I heard Ben McDonald talking about that the other day. Just literally that Charlie Morton was always in front of his locker, and Ben had such respect for that as a former 1-1 failed. I don't want to say that about, I love Ben. He didn't fail. He didn't go to the Hall of Fame, and he got hurt too. But like, the history of all of this and waiting for this owner to ride in and say he's one thing and then be another thing. Boy, man, that just after Angelo's, this has been kind of hard to take, brother.
Yeah, I mean, it is disappointing. And look, the reality is, I don't think he's suddenly going to change his stripes tomorrow. Again, if you can have a ballpark with a losing team and 15,000 people there a night, and you're making money, right? Like, you're still profitable. Like, you're still
Or
on the
you can
plus side.
game it to make money.
Yeah, but you're going to be profitable with TV money and all the other revenue that comes your way. You're gonna make money. So the question is, like, are you in it to win, or are you in it as an investment, as part of your portfolio? And so, unfortunately, I think, it's a portfolio thing. And I don't see him suddenly turning around and making those changes.
Well, he
Somebody.
didn't grow up liking baseball at all. I heard him. I went to Beth Tefillah the night before Trump got elected. There's a lot of concern about Israel there, obviously, a night before an election like that. And so there was a lot of talk about a lot of different things that night that he did from stage. But the one thing was very clear is he knows nothing about baseball. Like, he has not watched, he's watched markets making money, making money, making money, making money. That's all he's ever done is made money. And I don't think he watched Cal Ripken play. I'm not even sure he knew the rules all that well after 30 or 40 years of not watching it. And then he shows up behind home plate and he wants to be in the shots when they're playing at Citi Field. He needed to be behind home plate. It's just all of it, just my human sensibilities and my people come back to me after Free the Birds, Micah, and you knew me as a kid, right? I said this to Mark Fine when he took my press pass away this time. I had like a real off the record conversation with him on the phone because they wouldn't look at me. He wouldn't Zoom. They wouldn't have coffee. And he's known me 20 years. I said to him, I said, Mark, I did Free the Birds out of being naive. I was 38 years old at the time, and I like read Dickens and A Christmas Story. And I sort of thought I could change the heart of the old man as to what would really make him a hero, as opposed to what would make him whatever he died, however it worked for him. And I did Free the Birds thinking I could change his soul. I literally did. Go read my work. It was not the work of an asshole on the radio. It was the work of someone who loved the baseball team, who didn't want to be sitting here in 2025 talking about how the Masson money didn't do anything except enrich the kids, how nobody made any money around here except Chris Davis. Like, literally, you know what I mean? Like, literally, where did all the money go? It went to Chris Davis. It went to Aubrey Huff. You know what I mean? Like, where did the money go? Mike Flanagan committed suicide. You know what I mean? Along the way, I'm not hiding from that. They want to hide from it. I can't hide from it. I saw it. I witnessed it. So, like, just all of it, how Brooks was treated for most of the reign, just all of it, that it could have been deodorized and that they never picked up the phone and called Janet Marie, Charles Steinberg, Rick Vaughn. The first calls I would have made had they had me for a coffee and say, forget me. Call these people who know what they're doing and bring all of them in to consult. Find everyone who ever loved and hated Larry Lucchino and worked for him and get them back in here and figure out how to put the ship back together, because you got a lot of, like, I told Mr. Rubenstein when I shook his hand that night at Beth DeFillo, I shook his, I had 30 seconds with him, and I said, there's been a lot of trauma here. And I don't know what else to call it, Micah. When you see the empty seats, I mean, you're an old Oriole head. It's got, I mean, it's not weird, it's just bad. Just all of it's been bad, and you're 90 miles away, and your parents are stuck here, and you've adopted the Phillies and turned your kid onto it. You're having a good time with baseball, right? It's costing you a little money. We went through that. But if you want to have a bad time here, it's going to cost you money.
Yeah, but not too
Well, you
much
go to the bananas, you know, so.
time. I think, again, like I guess if I were Rubens, I'd say to you, would you rather have the team in Nashville, right?
Oh, see, now that's flippant, though,
Right?
right?
No, but I'm saying, like, is that might be, if I was him and I was talking to you and that was my response, is like, hey, stop complaining. Like, how about, what if,
Where's your credit card, right?
exactly,
Insert
right?
your credit card here if you want to keep the team. As I'm holding my Baltimore Colts belt buckle up for you, right? Yeah, so.
So what I always look at is, again, like, what's sort of the intent of the ownership? And like, look, you and I know that I think the fans still exist in Baltimore. I think that fan base is still there. Like, what does it take to reignite it? The main thing is what? Winning, right? Isn't that the main thing? Is that the main thing that it takes to reignite it? Like I said, when I got my Eagles season ticket renewal, and I paid that, pay the money, like, I don't sit there and go like, oh, I can't believe you raised the prices again. Like, who cares? Like, we win, right? Nobody, they could raise it. They could probably double it, and I'm not sure that they'd lose any season ticket holders, right? Like, they could make it ridiculous. And
See, the Ravens thought that too. The
but that
Ravens thought that too. And then they had the Wembley knee, you know, and Lamar's the greatest show on earth, except not everybody wants to pay for it. I mean, and that's an NFL problem that you don't have in Philadelphia, and a couple of places don't have that problem, but empty seats in the league are a problem in a general sense. And just the NFL's got, I mean, we'll get on to that. Michael Buchdahl's my guest. I wanted to talk Phillies and Orioles, but there's nothing to say about the Orioles other than who's this guy in his scorecard at this point. But the Eagles and the Ravens, as we move into that season, it really, I mean, and even the Washington, whatever they're called down there, they have a quarterback now. This is the NFL. It doesn't matter if your kicker's out being a predator. It doesn't matter. We'll draft a second round pick who got thrown out of a school for doing things untoward with young ladies. We'll have the drunk lineman. We'll sign him. Like I don't, the coach can go down and do everything with Trump except take a picture, because that wouldn't look good.
Well, I know, like, I kind of turned it, we're pretty, you and I are pretty aligned, politically, I would say,
Well,
and,
we've read the Constitution.
so I will just tell you, like, when the Eagles went to the White House, like, I pay no attention to it. I turned it off. I don't read anything about it. I don't look at it at all. It's the way that I handle, it's the way that I handle, kind of, the newspaper today, the Baltimore Sun, my
The
old
sun
beloved,
has set. There's no
my
doubt
old,
about that.
my
Yeah.
old beloved Baltimore Sun. Here, when I read the Inquirer, I can tell you that I pretty much skip the front section. I don't want to know. Like, it's almost like I don't need to read. It's the equivalent of the comics in terms of the characters, and I don't need to read it. I go right to the sports page. I read the food and wine, food and dining section, as you referenced. Like that's what I do. And I think, even today, sports still plays that great role in our lives of providing this distraction. Like when I head down to, CBP tonight for Sunday Night Baseball, for those couple of hours, all you're really concerned about is,
Ring the bell, baby.
ring the bell. Like you're there. And that's the way that I felt, pretty much my whole life. And when we talk about our love of sports and our investment there, it's always been for me like the great distraction. When I'm watching a couple of hours of, John Chaney basketball or whatever it is that I've been doing over the last 60 plus years. Like that's all I'm concerned about at that time. And that's why I loved it. And so, I have obviously passed that gene on to my children. Like I asked Lily, she's getting ready to go back to WashU and for senior year. And I said, oh, I, do you want to go Sunday night? We have to, do you want to go Sunday and Monday? The Orioles are here Monday. And she's like, yeah, like she would go every night
I
if.
saw you in the upper deck with your daughter watching a baseball game.
Yeah. So, and Friday night when we were at CBP for the game, Ben and I, we did the standing room. Like we used our ballpark pass. And tomorrow night when the Orioles are here, your old intern Max will be sitting with me. So he'll be in town and he'll go to the game with me and both the kids. So
That's awesome.
so I've
Give him my best, please.
I will. And I'm
Even though
sorry.
we're sending our worst.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's disappointing that, the series isn't everything that you kind of hope a Phillies Orioles series would be. But I still always look forward to, people still like when you hear, neutral parties talk about the best ballparks in the country, everyone always still has Camden Yards on that list, right? They always reference it as being one of the great ballparks in America and one of the favorites. And so, yeah, it's disappointing when you see it, one quarter filled, but I wish I could say that, ownership will change their philosophy tomorrow, but we kind of all know that you are what you are, right? Like in terms of the way you approach
Well,
things.
that's my point. My point is, I'm not doing Free the Birds 2. I'm not, writing daily notes to David Rubenstein to change his ways or to give me my press pass back. I mean, it's like I told Mark Fine, like, you've been linked in with me for 20 years. I'm a media member everywhere. If your first act coming into town is to pretend I'm not a media member, I know where I stand. That's good. Just let me know at the door. You and the Whistler, and you can go sit in last place, and I'm gonna watch it from here. But it's not that I'm gonna make a minimal investment of my time. I'm watching everything. I will make a minimal investment of my money. It's as simple as that. And so will everyone else I know. Like they just will. So nonetheless, I do want to get on to something way more fun for you, even more fun than the Eagles and the Ravens. And I'm going to Ocean City week after next. I'm doing the show at Mako, which is political. We'll have Congress people on, we'll have county leaders, just a lot of different folks on. And we'll be down there. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have my lottery giveaways and all that stuff, as well as my liver for that event in Ocean City. But I'm doing all my favorite foods. And I will see Philadelphia everything down there all of a sudden, where it used to be more of a Wildwood, like Philadelphia. And even I was in Dewey Beach. I was in Dewey Beach for Tommy Cromwell. So it was Philadelphia everything all over the bottle and cork that night. But even so, he wants the championship now. This is your chance. I haven't had you on since like February. It's your chance to like spike the ball a little bit, because I do intersect with Philadelphia people. I'm coming to see Sticks up in a shed this weekend in Camden, so I'm going to be up there this week. And I'm actually going to be featuring a prized Philadelphia item. I'm going to break the news to you. I'll let you do your thing here, but the whole notion of this Philadelphia thing and championship, did. When you were climbing the pole, did you get the grease on your shirt or no?
Okay, so like I'm at the Super Bowl, right? So I'm not on the pole. I'm not on Broad Street. I'm in where were we? New Orleans.
Okay.
You
You don't
know,
even know where the
so
hell you were.
you know, so you know, and if I have to hear my wife one more time remind me that I've gone to my last Super Bowl,
Oh, really?
I mean, she brings it up constantly, you know, because you know, like, look, I've taken, you know, Ben's 17 years old. He's been to three Super Bowls. He's seen his team win twice. And those are like extremely costly events.
I know all
So
about it.
you know, so she's always like, you know, that's it, you know, like that's it, you know, you've gone to your Super Bowls, you know, you're not going to another one. And we're always like,
Leonard Raskin tells the story back in 01 that he came down, he went to our party at Whiskey Joe's, you know, back in February or January of 01, January 28th of 2001, so 24 years ago. And he tells the story when he got home, he was a newlywed. And wife was like, "No, how much did you spend?" What? He had to buy her like a whole living room furniture set just to get level set on the 5 grand he spent going going to the Super Bowl. So I don't know how that works in your marriage, but I do know like you spend a healthy amount of time with sports, a healthy amount of time is money, like all of that. Like I would think like the other side of you, I should say, is that you eat. You go out and you and your wife eat things. So as I roll this 27th anniversary out, I'm eating my 27 favorite, the really things I really eat. Not no BS. I'm doing shows at sponsored places. I'm featuring interesting foods, but the first entry, and I'm going to break it to you because this isn't really even going to play till Monday anyway. We're going to be into this. My first item number 27 on the countdown. Philly Pretzel Factory outside of Bel Air, just north of Bel Air, up by the campus, by the community college campus, by the old Liberatories in the plaza. It's chain. It's the one that's closest here. There is never a time when I'm in Bel Air that I don't go and get a Philly. I got one on the way to Dewey. I found one in Dewey. It was the first thing I did. I wanted a pretzel. I don't know what it is, but it's number 27 on my list. It's very meager. They're three for $5. You can get them for a buck and a half, $2. Not Gucci, not bougie, but it's what I remember when I would walk out of the Spectrum, when I would walk out of the Vet after seeing Darryl Strawberry play or Doc Gooden pitch or Orel Hershiser pitch, or when Curt Schilling would have me up and see Tony Gwynn play, or like any Eddie Murray playing as a Dodger. I would get those pretzels after a Rush concert, after a Journey concert at the at the Spectrum. I had those pretzels on the day of Live Aid in 1985. So that's number 27. So there's my foodie thing, and it's perfect because it's Philadelphian and it's legit authentic, and I'm going there to start the tour on Tuesday. I will be at the Philly Pretzel Factory in Bel Air having item 27 on the list. Can't get more Philly than that. So what is your Baltimore thing? Your parent, give your Baltimore story because your family's beautiful and alive and well, and God bless them and protesting and doing all the things I love them for.
Yeah. What's the question? What's my
What's
fault?
your Baltimore thing? Like you've been here, like you come down here, here's a thing when you come down and you're like, I'm going there and getting that.
I'm trying to think like what, you know, what specifically I
You
look
can
for.
name five things if you
Yeah.
want.
I
You're
mean,
an eater though, dude.
yeah, but usually I'll tell you what, usually when I'm coming to Baltimore, I'm there to visit my parents, you know, and that's sort of the priority. So we don't get to a lot of other places. I like going to the, you know, I like going to the Essen Room. Have you ever been
I
there?
love the Essen Room.
Right. I like going to
Yes.
the Essen Room. I like picking up sandwiches. That's about a 2 minute drive to
Are
my.
you pastrami, corned beef? What are you doing over
I'm a
there?
corned beef. Yeah, corned beef. You know, so I like the Essen Room. I like the Essen Room better. Like I like that corned beef. I took the kids down to Lombard Street to what's the,
Atmans.
yeah, and I wasn't that into it. I felt like it wasn't as good as I remembered. Oh, you know what I always get is I always stop in Aberdeen and get the Chaps pit beef for myself. That's actually, now that I, you know, it's funny because a couple weeks ago I was driving back from visiting my parents, and I'm like, oh, I gotta stop. And my kid's been on me about weight, you know, he's telling me I need to lose 10.
ballpark. Hey, ballpark food 5 nights a week, Micah.
Well, we don't. And so I will tell you that I will be at Citizens Bank Park each of the next 4 days, right? Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. There is a likelihood that we will spend $0 once we enter the gate there. I know where I park. I park for free on the
I
street.
don't think I ever spent a nickel at a Ravens game in 25 years. I don't think, I mean, maybe a bottle of water, but like I just didn't eat and drink at Ravens games ever, ever, ever,
Well,
right?
that's an example too of something that ball like is really annoying at Camden Yards, unless they brought it back this year. Is they're one of the only stadiums in the in MLB that doesn't have a designated driver program anymore. And so when, you know, the designated driver program, if you're going to Philly, like if you're going, somebody's going to Philly for one of these games this week, like the designated driver program is actually the best in Philly than any other city. You actually get the equivalent of a $7 concession credit, and you just scan it. You don't even have to show your license anywhere. You just scan the ballpark app on the QR code, and then it gives you this QR code. It says for a beverage, but it's actually like basically a $7 credit. And so we use that
I fill up my
for
water bottle at Meriwether at the arena where I go because
you know.
I like well, I'm a water guy, right?
Yes,
Like I do
yeah,
hot
so
yoga, it's just what I drink, you know?
I mean, I probably if I go, I go to like I go to over 50 baseball games a year. I might have 2 beers in
Yeah, I probably go to 25 to 30 concerts a year. I don't buy 5 beers, probably maybe 10 in the year, you know, every other show. And sometimes if I go all in. I'll get three. You know, I'll spend $60 tonight. I'm not driving, you know, I'm out of town, wherever, maybe more like that. But it's amazing how expensive it can be and how
Oh, it's crazy.
special occasion it is that it used to just be. We went to a lot of Caps games and got the cheap seats. My dad and I went to Orioles games and sat in the outfield. But the ballpark passes are very inviting. And we're trying to figure out, I always say to Luke, what's it going to cost your mother to be a fan just on TV? Like, what's the streaming going to cost? How is that all going to bake in to paying Bryce Harper or paying Gunnar Henderson or whatever? But so your food places, Essen Room is your and Chaps. Okay. And you plugged Atman's, even though you didn't plug Atman's. I would tell you that two out of the three, this is like a meatloaf song. Two out of the, by the way, I'm looking for a good meatloaf. Two out of the three could be on my list. I'm just saying that. So I'm 27 days in. And some of these are going to be tried and true Baltimore traditions. Some of them are going to be like, oh my God, I never heard of that place. You go there? And I'll be like, yeah. If you want drunken noodles, you'll go there. You will. Trust me. So, and I always follow your recommendation. Dude, I've called you when I've been in Philadelphia and said, where should I eat? You're that guy.
Well, you know, like, yeah, so the equivalent of, you know, the way that I keep my, you know, my marriage in place for 25 years. So we've been married 25 years. So is that Saturday night, like last, so you'll see me. I'm at Citizens Bank Park, 5 out of 6 nights on this homestand. The one night that I'm not there is Saturday night, because that's the night that my wife and I go out to dinner. And so I almost always miss Saturday games because, you know, because we go
That's
out,
sacred. I got you. I
right?
got
And
you.
so,
Yeah.
you know, so, you know, so, you know, so that's where we spend a lot of our discretionary, income is on our dinner dates. And we go to nice places and we spend good money. And like, that's what we do as me and her versus me and the kids. And so, you know, in Baltimore, like I was there for a conference last year. I love the Foreman restaurants. You know, so I like Cingali, which I've been to a bunch of times. You know, the Charleston just won a huge award, James Beard, right? Like I think I was
Now
just
nobody can get in.
yeah, they just won a
Cindy,
huge
yeah.
James Beard a couple weeks ago, and I had dinner there last year, and it was phenomenal. So you know, I like the high end places. You know, my dad always likes to tease me, you know, because he'll look on Facebook at where we went to dinner, and then he'll see the prices of
How
what.
much did you spend for a lamb chop?
So even actually, if you look at the post from our dinner last night in Philly, I actually post the menu, but I don't. I scanned over. I cut out the
Just
price
for your dad.
just so that you can see that
Yeah.
the little tiny appetizer was, $28 or whatever.
Dude, I gotta tell you, my wife and I were in Paris for our anniversary, and it was a couple of 5, 7 years. It was after her illness, but she was doing well. We were in Paris. We made a Joël Le Bubuté, whatever, reservation. We were gonna do this Gucci thing, like way out of the bounds of anything we would ever spend. We go to dinner all the time. We eat out. I have sponsors everywhere. I'm eating 27 different things all month long here, right? Some of them more like I'm doing a lobster tail at Beaumont that's very, very sort of high end and lovely. And but I'm also doing the Philly Pretzel Factory to start with, and there's going to be desserts. There's even going to be a snowball. My favorite snowball is going to be a part of this, which is a $3 item. So, I mean, along life's highway, we can all do different things. But that night, we were feeling great. We were starving ourselves in Paris, which is dumb, and waiting to get there. And I swear to God, we walked in and we took the air in and we looked at it and we thought we're going to spend a lot of money. And I looked at her and she looked at me and we're like, I saw that prosciutto in that cheese store with those rolls and that wine. Let's go do that for 12 euro. And we literally quacked out. And it was at that moment we're like, you know what? Maybe we're just not meant for that. Maybe we're not meant for the $400 Kobe dinner in Tokyo. Maybe we're meant for the $6 pastry in Tokyo in the window. That's unlike anything I've ever had in my life. So I'm a New York eyeball eater. I'll know about things there. I'll have places I can go. 10, $20 hand food. Because you mentioned like Cat's Deli, I've never been there. I've been outside. Every time I go, I'm alone. And when I'm alone and I look at the $26 sandwich that I have no int I just could not physically eat it. There's nowhere to put it because my hotel's uptown and I'm downtown. Maybe I give it to a stranger on the street, but I could never just, I just have never done it because I've never had three people to help me eat the sandwich, Micah.
Well, there's a one of the top cheesesteak places in this region. It's about 15 minutes from my house in Mount. It's actually in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. It's called Lilo's, and it's gotten people now are traveling there to get their tomato pie and their cheesesteaks. And I can't eat a whole one. And they cost, like whole ones now, like a whole cheesesteak now is like $18 or something at all these
I
places.
got one in New York. I went to Bradley Cooper's place. God bless you, Philadelphian people, by the way. And I got the cheesy, the Cooper cheese and the onions. And my wife wasn't with me, so I could get the onions. By the way, it's a block from the Led Zeppelin house from the front of the building, a physical graffiti house, which was also the steps where Waiting on a Friend was filmed from the Rolling Stones. So I went. Dude, it was delicious. It was fine. It was good. I got some water. It was as big as my torso. And like, what am I gonna do with that kind of? It was an $18 sandwich, and that's fine. But like, I just can't eat like that, bro. So when I go to places like Paris and New York, and I love New York, I just do. I'm a $10 or less item. Munch walk, beer munch walk, food munch, get some noodles walk, get a slice of pizza walk. I'm not a sit down, eat a meal guy. And I just can't be that guy, you know?
Yeah, but even like that, like we were in New York, Ben and I were at the Yankee series last weekend, so we were in New York the whole Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we stayed in Midtown, and even the quote unquote the cheap places that you walk by are still, they're now more like 15 or 20 than five, right? Like in terms of the spend. So when you come, people, we were. Actually, yesterday I was trying to. I had promised some people that are coming into town soon cheesesteaks, and we were debating like where we're going to get the cheesesteaks for these folks to make
Take
sure.
them to Joe's. I'll listen. I will get Dick Girardi. We'll take him down to Joe's and treat you right down there in Fishtown. Get him there. Parking's tough there, but the cheesesteak's delicious.
I
Hey,
know, right?
Micah, I got a lettuce and tomato on my cheesesteak in Philly. They called me a tourist.
Oh yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, I mean, no, you can't do that. Well, I remember when I came here for college, the early 80s, and I told my dad I wanted a cheesesteak, and he had no idea what a cheesesteak was. And he actually thought it was like a steak that
Right.
you melt cheese on or something. And I remember he was very unimpressed.
No, it's because he never went to Captain Harvey's in Dundalk, is what it was. He never brought him over
But
here.
he goes to the they recently they said the brunch at the Rusty Scupper is still really good.
Jazz brunch, outstanding. Yes, very nice. All
Well,
right.
they go. So my dad's been a volunteer at the he's a volunteer pathfinder at BWI. So he's been doing that for 25 years. And so he goes to he goes to BWI for 25 years as a volunteer at the info booth, helping people. He just gets a kick out of it. He loves it.
I got to stop and see him next time I fly.
So
That's what I need to do.
go to
Take a
the
picture with him.
believe me, it's the only probably the only 90-year-old guy that is going to be down there helping people.
That's a beautiful thing, man. You gotta
So
get to a ball game with your old man, Micah. Come on
he's
now.
not I don't think he's going to the ballpark again anytime soon. Actually, I saw a Facebook post pop up last week of a game where he had come to Philly with my brother. And we all actually Ben was too tiny. Ben wasn't even in the picture. So it was Lily and my brother and my dad and me up in this 300 level at CVP for a Phillies game. And it was 11 years ago. And I remember thinking like, it was kind of difficult to get around there. And so now it's 11 years later, and they luckily I still have good reasons to come to Baltimore quite often, see my family. My brother is still there at Catholic Charities, at Villa Maria. And so that's why I get to go to the Ed Block Awards every year, because it's tied to the school that my brother's the administrator at. So he brings me and one of my kids is a guest every year for Ed Block. So we've gotten to go to the Ed Block Awards the last couple of years, which is a very cool event. So we look forward to that. But otherwise, most of my Baltimore trips are to see family. I'll look at sometimes, like I know I'm coming up in a week or two, and I look at the Orioles schedule to see if I can shoulder a game on one side or another. My brother's actually gonna my brother my son's gonna go visit my sister in Bethesda. Go to Nats Phillies up there, and then we'll meet up in Baltimore at my parents' afterwards. So, and I still see all, I don't know if you see like I've my old buddy Ed Waldman from the Sun.
Of course.
I follow him on Facebook.
He loves sports. I've seen his family in airports at Ravens games. Oh, yeah.
Go to a lot of games. They go to a lot of Ravens games. So I haven't seen Ed in a long time.
And he's a Phillies guy that went the other
He
way.
is a Phillies guy. So
That is
we always
crazy.
had that Temple Baltimore connection,
Right. Well, we had the journalism connection at one point back when there was journalism. Mike Buchdahl now is a practicing attorney in the Philadelphia area. He is a longtime Baltimorean, still claims Baltimore some of the time, just not the sports teams. He's traded them in for better models, and he'll be rooting for the Phillies to ring the bell this week against the wishes of his father and his brother and his nephew and probably everybody else. So.
I actually think like if the Orioles hadn't had decades of irrelevance, right? Like I think I probably would have never. I think they would have always remained my number one team in baseball. The Ravens were, the Ravens weren't there in my childhood. Like the Ravens came after I left Baltimore. And so same thing with the Colts. Like I loved the Colts. I only stopped rooting for the Colts because they didn't have Baltimore in front of their name anymore.
So
I
you
was
saw the
really
transactional nature of sports, and you just decide. Like I was a Houston Oilers fan, you know what I mean? Now we get all these years in. The Ravens have thrown me out and treat me awful and expect me to run around with a purple top on. I can't fake it till I make it. But I still love sports and I still know more about it. So I just watch it from a different lens than you, and I love the lens that you watch it from in the upper deck with your kids. I do. And that's why I brought you on for an hour to jibber jabber. But I gotta go because it's my 27th anniversary. You got to go because you're going to the game. I love you, Micah. It's great to have you on, and I love having you on once a year. We should get together more often. All right.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if you're in Camden, New Jersey, you're like 20 minutes from me. So maybe 15.
I'll take you out for a proper cheesesteak, some Italian pork. We'll do
All
something
right.
right. Yeah,
Yeah,
one thing I'm not doing,
sure.
I'll get the broccoli rabe, but I say this to my wife. You get that pizza without the cheese, the pizza that's just the bread and the sauce?
Yeah,
No.
bye. Yeah.
No. I don't do tomato pie unless it's got cheese on it. That's all.
All right.
Put some cheese on there. All right, Michael Buchdahl's my friend. We're going to step out, take a break. It's our 27th anniversary. I'm being goofy because the Orioles are in last place and nothing's really going on at training camp except injuries. Luke's out there. I'm here. And we're going to be eating great, great stuff. So make sure you're following along at Baltimore Positive, including my little poem that I put together. It wasn't quite Andrew Dice Clay, but it was clever.
No,
Stay with
I
us.
read the prom I read it this morning. I was looking on Facebook.